Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
One of the biggest problems that people inside the United States have when it comes to their mortgage is they don't understand the backdrop of the bankruptcy of the United States and the House Joint Resolution that's already been put in place for the remedy. Now, if you can understand this, the only thing that you will need is to formulate the correct documents and serve them. It's just that simple. Now, there's a series of documents that we have available for you at www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Once you get there, before you do anything, call me. Let's find out where you are so we'll know how to deal with the situation. Contact me, Tahaka Montiel Bay, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m., Eastern Standard Time, and then we can get you over. Once you get this information on your belt and you read it, you'll find out just how simple it is to get this thing done. What we have is a crisis inside the United States, and it comes because people don't understand what the solutions are and what the remedies are and how to take these remedies and put in place to solve the problems that they have. Go to http www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Click on the link and observe the video. Just examine the whole page and click on the link to Hawker Archives. Go over there. When you get there, contact me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Welcome, Moors, the Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Ahaka Amana L. Bay, and this evening we're dealing with Secrets of Attraction and Life After Death, Part 1. We'll be wrestling with the following questions. How should men and women attract each other? What do we do? How do we go about doing that? And we'll have excerpts coming from a gentleman by the name of Mr. Ralph Smart that has a fantastic book. How do you know he or she is the one? How do we know we got the right person? How do we truly love ourselves? Reincarnation, is it real? Does reincarnation exist? Is there life after death? These and many other questions we're going to deal with here this evening. And I'd like to start out by saying I certainly appreciate you all for being tuning into these broadcasts and learn this information. We're going to bring some things to the table or shed some light on some things that a lot of us have not understood. I mean, we get frustrated. We can't figure out why this, that, and the other is happening. How come he does this? Why she's attracted to this guy? Why I can't, you know, what's going on? And so we're going to deal with that in the first half of this broadcast. And then in the second half, we're going to deal with this reincarnation thing, this life after death thing. We got to get this stuff clearly understood and fixed in our minds. So, because if you have this knowledge and have an understanding of this kind of thing, I think that you can do a whole lot. I mean, you're not fearful. You're not looking at, I'm wondering what's going to happen. You know, did he go to heaven? Did he go to hell? And all this kind of business. We'll get rid of all that foolishness. So I like to say, for those of you who are on your social sites, if you're on Facebook, send me a friend request. Send that to Tahaka Amana L. Bay. I'll grant that friend request. That'll give you access to my wall where we post our shows and where we also post articles for very important information that you can use in your everyday life. Matter of fact, we'll be coming out with some new articles before the weekend is over. Now, if you're on LinkedIn or Facebook or wherever you are, send me a friend request. Send that to Tahaka Amana L. Bay. They keep me banned over there. I don't know. Maybe it's because of the kind of information I'm putting. It's got to be. And because they don't want this kind of stuff out, because they want to keep a lid on this. But anyway, we're cutting it. So they want to try to suppress me. So if you go ahead and send that friend request, I go ahead and grant it. That'll get you access to my wallet and the information. Okay. Now, we offer free articles this evening. Secrets of America, the U.S. bankruptcy and the Moors, the 14th Amendment exposed, the commerce game and how it plays, et cetera, et cetera. All this stuff is available. Just send me a blank email. Say, Todd, send me those free articles you mentioned on your broadcast, and I'll send that right on to you, okay? Just send that to Tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush that to you. All right. Now, after the first hour, we're going to open up the phone line. So if you have questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. The number to call in is area code 310-982-4184. Dial that number, and that'll give me an indication that your hand is raised, and I'll go ahead and recognize that, and you can tell us how you see it. All right? Okay. Now, we're going to start with this attraction thing first. And I need you to pay very, very close attention and keep in mind the gentleman that's delivering this information, his name is Ralph Smart. Okay, so y'all sit tight, and because we're going to learn some things here this evening. I guarantee that. We are going to learn some stuff here today. Because I said, and I listened to this brother, and I was fascinated because a lot of the stuff I knew, I said, but, you know, this is something that we need to get out to the people and so that they can understand, you know, how do you know if she's the one, he's the one? How do you let go of something that's not good? How to raise your frequency? What about this immortality thing? It's a lot of stuff that we really need to wrap our minds around and get some clear and concise understanding about some things. Okay? And so this evening, we're going to deal with just that. I need you all to hold on for 1 second, and then we'll be coming right in. Here we go.
Peace. Infinite waters diving deep once again. Here we are in nature. The birds are singing. It's beautiful. This is sexology, water, fire, hot, cold, yin, yang. How to approach a woman or man, depending if you are a woman or man, whatever your fancy. Along my journey approaching women, it's been tough in my early journey. You have to wrap up the nerves to approach a woman. Many of us, we have a game plan in our early journey. Let me present myself to this woman in the best way, in the best light, so she can fall under my spell, my charm. The best way now I've seen on my journey is to be yourself 100%. Women love men who are themselves. You have to be yourself 100%. That is the best way to approach a woman. Forget the games, the game plans, the writing in your book. What shall I say? I remember in my early journey, I would be in the park, I would see a beautiful woman. And I would be thinking in my mind, what shall I say? So eventually, when I spoke to this woman, I didn't know what to say. Because whenever you are having a script, the lines get messed up. You start saying all kinds of nonsense because there is too much effort being used. We have to move in a very effortless way when we are approaching women, if you are a man. We have to have fun because women love humor. This is from my experience. Women love men who are themselves. That's why they say, why do all the bad men, all the bad boys get all the hot ladies? It is not because they are bad, because in essence there is no good or bad in the universe. It is only because these so-called bad boys are tapping into their expression. They are tapping into their so-called dark side, their inhibitions. They are freeing up themselves. When you are free, you allow someone else to be free. So when a woman sees a man who is free, who is loving himself 100%, that is attractive, that is sexy, that is charming, because it allows her to express herself 100%. Real recognizes real. If you are coming to approach a woman with all of this fake phony business, then she can see through that. Women, from experience, I can say this, women have this amazing ability to sense BS from a man. Many of us men, we like to walk around very nonchalantly. So what a man will do, this is what I used to do in my early journey, and I had friends who used to do it. They would, for instance, go to a library, they would see a beautiful woman, and they would go and sit next to her, and they would say, oh, what are you studying? Oh, that's brilliant. I'm really interested. But all along, the woman knows the reason why you are coming to her is because you find her attractive. So she already knows this. And by the time you get to asking her out and saying how beautiful she is, she hasn't got time for that, because in the beginning, you were selling a false persona of yourself. Persona coming from the Latin per, meaning through, sonus, sound. Through sound, talking through the mask. We have to let go of our mask. That is how to approach women if you are a man. We have to become ourselves 100%. Let go of this person who we are selling. No. Stop trying. I found on my journey, it worked wonders. When you tap into your authenticity 100%, because women love passion. If you have passion for whatever you do, it could be collecting pebbles along a beach and putting them in a bread basket. Women will love you. Just as long as you do it every day. But we need passion. It doesn't matter how expensive your shirt is, what car you have. The more you adorn yourself in all of this material possessions, the harder it is to find your kindred mate, your perfect mate. There is no perfect mate, by the way, but someone who you resonate deeply with, because you make it harder for them to see who you really are. The more you take off the layers, the easier it is for a woman to see you. Just as if you are a woman, the easier it is for a man to see you. So if you are a woman now, okay, how do you approach a man? A lot of women have been conditioned not to approach men, because if you do, it is not a very feminine thing to do. Men will look at you like you are cheap. No. All of that is coming from a very limited 3D perspective on male and female relationships. We have to see, and women have to see, that men love confident women. That is what is attractive. In essence, it's about becoming the warrior princess. Oh my, that is the most attractive thing to a man. Let me tell you, that's the secret right there. If you are a warrior princess, you can have any man in the world. Because a warrior princess is a woman who is deeply connected to her feminine essence. That is the beauty, the softness, connecting to Mother Nature, being very light and free. However, she is also in tune with her masculine energy, which is the woman who doesn't take BS from nobody. She is free thinking. She is intelligent. She has an open mind. She can talk to you about anything. Men love a conversation. Therefore, if you are a woman who is just relying on her looks, who is going to talk to you for a long time? How is that man going to connect to you for a long time? However, if you can keep a conversation going, then the man will fall in love with you instantly. How do you carry yourself? The secrets of body language. When we talk of male and female relationships, yin and yang essence, the posture is all that matters when we talk of approaching women, when we talk of approaching men. Keep your head up, stick your chest out, walk full of confidence, have a high self-esteem of yourself, and that all goes back to perception. The perception we have is greater than the perception other people have of us. If you have the best image of yourself, people can feel that energy, that this is a person that loves themselves 100%. If you don't love yourself, how can you love anybody else? People feel this energy. Women feel this energy. Having the womb, which is the stargate, they can absorb energy. They are receptive. That is their greatest gift. Therefore, if a man is walking around with low confidence levels, it does not matter what pickup lines he uses. Sorry, it's not going to work. Because the body is the unconscious mind. So when we talk about approaching males, when we talk about approaching females, you have to see that it's all about the body. Body, mind, spirit, the three, like I always say, are interconnected. A balanced mind equals a balanced body. So in approaching women, in approaching men, make sure you get your mind right. That means also by increasing your vibration, going back to nature, planting your feet in Mother Nature, eating healthy, organic, plant-based foods, sun-based food, so your face is glowing, so you become irresistible. Because people love life. In essence, it's all about what you can give. That is the secret in approaching women or in approaching men. What can you offer to this person? Can you give them something, or are you going to take something away from them? Many women, I always love talking to women, and they think I'm going to ask them out on a date. I love doing it because you learn so much. And women, from so many women I've spoken to, they always tell me this secret. They say that many men come up to them, they approach them in a restaurant, in the park, while they're shopping. And men tell them how beautiful they look. And that may not be the best way to approach a woman. Because are you just seeing what's on the surface? Are you just seeing the beauty? Yes, she knows she's beautiful. We know she's beautiful. But what else? You have to dive deeper to approach women. Instead of just seeing their beauty, look at their other talents, because that will impress them. Bing, two thumbs up. That will impress them in a big way, because you are moving past the transient body. Yes, the body is beautiful. It's a work of art from Mother Nature. It's a great gift. However, there are other attributes that we all have that also possess a beautiful quality. This is what men should focus on if you want to approach a woman. If she is into gardening, talk to her about gardening. Don't pretend you are interested in gardening. Make sure that you also have the same passion and that you can talk to a woman about her passion. And if you are a woman, that you can talk to a man about his passion. Here is the secret to approach women or men. Eye contact. Look the person you are speaking to directly in the eyes. The eyes are the windows to the soul. This is so attractive. This is so sexy. And women love it, as well as men love it. If you're a woman and you look a man in the eyes, they can see your beautiful pupils pulsating, your irises, intricate colors, and this is a massive turn on because they are seeing your essence. Many of us, when we approach people, we have fear. Fear is false evidence appearing real. We have to let go of fear. In essence, that helps us approach and talk to anyone. It helps us to give us our mojo back. Don't be too serious. No one likes someone who is too serious all the time. Remember to loosen up, have fun, smile. That's why a lot of women so-called love bad boys, because they are open, they are honest, they are free, they are saying things how they are. They are not sugarcoating it. They are showing women that I am like this, take it or leave it. A lot of so-called nice guys, they say, why do nice guys always finish last? A lot of nice people have to realize that nice is just a word. It does not mean anything. No one loves someone they are going to have to take care of. Some women love a mama's boy, but the majority of women do not love a mama's boy. They want to see that you can stand on your own two feet. However, women, from my experience, women love men who have a great relationship to their mother, because that shows them how that man is going to treat them. So men, love your mothers, because without your mother you would not be on this planet. We have to love our mothers. So in approaching women, we have to show them in a 3-minute time space that we can do all of those things I've just talked about. Go for it. The challenge is on. Go. I'm timing. We have to remember that slow down. Slow down. That is how to approach a woman. That is how to approach a man. Don't talk so fast. Many men feel they are at a nightclub, they're at a bar, they're in nature, they see a beautiful woman that just steals their breath away. Okay, I have to talk fast. Because if I don't talk fast, then I'm not going to capture her attention. I'm not going to capture her imagination. However, the slower you can talk, the more calmer you appear, the more confident you appear. That is the secret. Relax. I see it like this, from my experience. It is not the man that catches a woman. It is the woman that catches the man. Women have already chosen who they are going to have a relationship with, just like men have already chosen who they are going to have a relationship with. So we have to see that by just calming down. Chill out. If you see a beautiful woman, get your tissue out, because men start sweating. Get the tissue. Wipe the sweat off. A lot of women have this innate ability in knowing if a man is calm or tense. If a man is free in spirit, just to be himself, because that is the most attractive thing any gender can do. And in essence, we exist within each other. Masculine contains feminine. Feminine essence contains masculine essence. There is no separation on a higher level. So, once women can feel this man is being himself, a lot of men always feel they have to fill the void. That silence that happens when a man meets a beautiful woman all alone or with friends. Friends are slightly harder to do because once you are approaching this woman, now you need to have your friends go and get with her friends. It's complicated. Silence is attractive. When you are approaching a woman or you are approaching a man, don't feel you always have to rush to say something. Don't feel you always have to fill the gap. Don't feel you always have to become an entertainer. You are not at a circus. Remember that when approaching a woman or when you are approaching a man. You don't have to be this extravagant person who is making someone laugh all the time. Just be very simple, very pure, very organic. Organic is how it should be. Once you are organic, you allow someone to see who you are. Yes, we can never reveal to everyone who we are 100%. Because we only show other people what we want them to see. But in essence, we can show them part of our true self. This is the most we can give them. In approaching a woman or a man, you have to respect them. You have to appreciate them. You have to honor them. Don't see all women as the same. Don't see all men as the same. See everyone as a unique being on planet Earth. That works wonders. Be spontaneous. Be humorous. Be light. Be free. Remind that person that you are human. Do not become a machine. And there have been many books written about how to attract women. You need to wear these shoes. You have to play this game. Forget about games. That is so 3D. We're moving right now into infinite dimensions and expressions of living on planet Earth. We have to be original. Originality is the key to approaching women. That is the key to approaching men. Yes. Men love women who are natural. That is the secret when a woman is approaching a man. If you are a woman and you are looking for a beautiful man, a strong man, a handsome man, a warrior prince, then call me. Just kidding. Women have to realize that men love natural women. You don't have to wear a lot of makeup to approach a man, and that is the secret. Once women see, it is the heart. This is what captivates a man to your presence. It is not actually your physical appearance. Yes, of course, it is great to be beautiful because we are attracted to symmetry. However, going beyond that, it is the essence within you. Because there are many beautiful women, even I've come across, but there was something about their energy that was off. However, there are some women who may not be the most beautiful in the world. However, they have cultivated such inner radiance that this surpasses all physical beauty and in turn makes them physically beautiful. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. When we talk about approaching men, approaching women, we have to look at it like this. How are you talking to a woman if you are a man? How are you talking to a man if you are a woman? A lot of men see a hot woman in a car and they start whistling. Wolf whistling. From experience, women have told me, stop doing that. This annoys them. Because they are not a dog. And that goes back to, don't just focus on a woman's beauty. Come harder than that. Show them a side of yourself that is original. Don't do what the other 150 men have just done. Okay, look at it like this. You have a beautiful woman. She meets, maybe, in my estimation, growing up, I'm sure some beautiful women, they were having maybe 10 guys approach them every single hour. Maybe more. Maybe you women can let me know how many men approach you every single hour. Let's get the numbers. Let's get the statistics on this. This is serious stuff. So, with all of those men approaching this woman, what is going to make you stand out from the crowd? Because many women have seen it all before. They've heard the same lines before. So we have to become original. In essence, we have to be ourselves. We have to love ourselves 100%. A lot of women love the warrior prince. This is someone who is not just about for themselves, but is about working for the community. That is sexy to a lot of women. This is what they've told me from experience. Because it shows that the man will be that provider. The man will be that protector for them. So whenever you approach a woman, once you can show them that you can...
Okay, Moses. Now, the next question is, how do we know he or she is the one? You know, how? Okay, you meet a sister, you meet a brother, everything's going so good in the beginning, but how do we know? You know, what's involved with that? How do we know that we have Mr. or Mrs. Right? How do we know
that? Peace, infinite waters, diving deep once again. We're out here in nature with the sun up, first thing in the day. This is sexology, water, fire, hot, cold, yin, yang. Fantastic. I haven't done these in a while. People are like, where are your videos? Your sexology videos. I haven't forgotten about you. How to know if she or he is the one? How do I know this? How do you know this? On my journey, I've found that your true love is your best friend. Your true love is your best friend. You don't feel ashamed around them. You can be yourself. They bring out the best in you. They bring out the inner child within you. They help you expand your love energy. I've found there are two types of relationships many of us have on Earth. The first type of relationship is what I call the Coca-Cola relationship. It tastes good in the beginning, but in the long run, it's bad for you. This is where we see someone and we instantly fall in love with them. However, he who sees the face does not see the heart. It's not about seeing, it's about feeling. The other type of relationship is the water relationship. The water relationship is the true relationship. It is the fluid relationship. It is the dynamic relationship. It is forever changing. It is never static. I saw this on my journey. I'm in a water relationship right now. You may have seen her with Sharu. We've traveled. She brings out the best in me and vice versa. We are a team. We work on the same mission to help raise the vibration. The difference between the Coca-Cola relationship and the water relationship. Here we go. In a Coca-Cola relationship, the person you are with wants you to focus all your attention on them. It is energy depleting. A water relationship, on the other hand, is energy generating. A water relationship is all about transparency. It is all about purification. A water relationship helps us activate our highest potential. It helps us, in essence, work on our higher nature. This is what I found on my journey. I made a video which went viral, how to clear your mind, breathe easy, just be. A lot of people want to know the story behind this video. It was January. We were in Cape Verde, the islands, me and Sheru, or Sheru and I. And we were there, and we were talking, and she was bringing something out of me which was so powerful. We were talking about we're in paradise, but at the same time, we still have these thoughts in our minds. Instantly, I just made a video there on the spot. That is the water relationship. Because your partner is bringing something so powerful out of you. Thank you, Sheru. That's what it's all about. The water relationship is, in essence, where our partner moves us into universal love. It's not just about loving one person. We have to expand our love to everything we come into contact with. So, you know if you are with the right person when your partner or your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your wife, whatever it is, they are encouraging you to share your love with the world. A Coca-Cola relationship is where someone just wants your love for themselves. This relationship cannot grow. Just like a plant, for a plant to grow, it needs sunlight, it needs water, it needs to be exposed to the elements. This is the water relationship. To know someone is right for you, you have to feel them. Because looks can be deceiving. There are so many infinite levels of attraction. I see so many beautiful women every single day. However, that's only one level of attraction. Because from the past, I've been in Coca-Cola relationships where everything is just about the surface. What clothes are you wearing? You know you are with the right person when they accept you 100% for who you are. It doesn't matter what you're wearing. You don't need to wear designer clothes. You don't need to have a fresh haircut. You can just be yourself. Water relationships help us connect to our heart space. It is all about that heart, that love energy. That is the true relationship. And you know it because you feel it. You don't see it. It is something intangible to the eyes. That is how to know you are with the right person. And the right person is someone who is mirroring something back to you. People say, I have a soulmate. She is the one. He is the one. I have seen right now on my journey, I have many beautiful reflections out there. That's why I love everyone who is resonating in their heart space. I can say, I love you. Coca-Cola relationships. Check this out. Coca-Cola relationships. In the past, we say to someone, I love you. What we really want to say is, I want you. It is all about possession. Water relationships are where we say I love you and we can allow the other person to be free. It is all about evolution in relationships. You know you are with a magnificent being when they are always encouraging your evolution. They are helping you evolve to a higher level. The relationship we have with someone is no different from the relationship we have with life. It is one giant mirror. They are teaching us about ourselves. We are doing the same to them. There is only growth. We have to let go in relationships to be ourselves. And you find the more you can laugh and smile, that's how you know she or he is the one. But we have many beautiful reflections out there. It's all about universal love. We can't put our love in a box, because once you do that, it becomes limited. You will know she is the one or he is the one when you can talk to them for hours. You don't need any external stimulation. You don't need to go to the movies. You create your own movie. And I'm not talking just about a sex tape here. I'm talking about any kind of movie you want. You create your own scenery. You have this imagery where the two of you can connect with the whole universe. This is the universal love. You don't cut yourself off. The Coca-Cola relationship is all about being exclusive. But when you are like that, you can never grow. Your true love is an extension of yourself. Your true love is not just about loving one person. How deep is your love for me? It's about opening up your heart to the world and to whoever resonates with your heart energy, because that way your love always expands, grows higher, 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 higher. It has no limit. Your true love is everything. It can be in animals. Doesn't matter. It's when you can express your heart energy 100% to whatever you come into contact with. The greatest relationship we can have is with ourselves. And on my journey, I found that when you connect with someone and your hearts merge, you merge with a greater part of yourself. You breathe. You don't feel dependent on them for your happiness. You become the source of your own happiness. And they allow you to thrive. That is what a water relationship is all about. Thriving, creating, growing. The water relationship does not taste of anything. It is not sweet or bitter. Leaves you with a neutral taste in your mouth. But it is healthy for you in the long run, because it cleanses you internally. And that's fantastic. The greatest relationships we can have help us evolve to become the best versions of ourselves. That is the secret. You know she is the one, or he's the one, when you get this beautiful warm feeling inside of you. You start smiling for no reason. Just one thought of them makes your day. The water relationship is where we let go of gender roles. I saw this in my own water relationship with Sharu. I'm a man, so I do this. You're a woman, so you do this. No, that's like a Coca-Cola relationship. I don't want to go back there. Because we are seeing, in essence, we exist within each other. the masculine contains the feminine, and the feminine contains the masculine. This is where Earth is heading to. In essence, we are all becoming one. One. To know you are with the one, you have to feel it. Close your eyes and feel this person. Don't see them. Don't see them as a label, as a bank account, as a job. Feel them inside of your heart and expand. And then open your eyes. And if you're smiling, that's it. Because it is all about that inner feeling. In essence, it's all about what they're bringing and what they are drawing out of you. Relationships serve as mirrors. They show us our brightest light or our darkest shadow. It is up to us to create the paradise with someone else, more so with everything we come into contact with. Create that love harmony. That is the only thing that can heal the planet right now. We're here, we're in nature, with the beautiful birds singing, infinite waters, diving deep once again. Stay well, stay healthy. Peace.
Okay, well, what's the solution to the mortgage fraud? It's very, very simple. There's documentation whereby you can cancel a mortgage and property taxes at the same time. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. If you are not in foreclosure, however, you have been served with some notices about your mortgage, being late, if you just don't have the money, cancel the contract. It's real, real simple. Along with you get rid of the mortgage package, we'll also give you Tahaka's archives. That way you cannot go wrong. Feel free to contact me, Tahaka Monael Bay, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Okay, Morris.
Okay, we're back. Now, the information that we just put out here just a moment ago, this is very, very important information, and I think the young man has a great deal of valid points, and it is at this time that I would like to open up phone lines. If anybody have any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. The number to call in is 310-982-4184, and let us know what you think about this situation. And there's quite a bit of other information that he has to discuss, but what we're going to do now is we're going to go over and take a glimpse at this reincarnation thing, and then we're going to come back and we'll close out with other information on ourselves and our relationships with one another. Okay? So we're going to go over here. We're going to take a quick look at this right here. But keep in mind, if anybody got any questions or comments, now's the time to raise your hand. And we have placed the call-in number in the chat room, so feel free to dial that number. And we'll recognize your hand, and we'll be able to let you in. You let us know what you think about it, okay?
Peace, right. Infinite waters diving deep once again. I'm back. Reincarnation.
No, you're not. Well, I guess you are.
Peace, infinite waters diving deep once again. I'm back. Reincarnation. How many of us have coming back to Earth on our wish list? Some people want to come back, some people don't. When we talk of reincarnation and past lives, a lot of us, we have this remembrance of being on this planet. A lot of people have these experiences which just trigger their memory, and they realize that they've been here before. And when we talk of reincarnation, what is reincarnation? Well, we can just look at the word itself, incarnation, from the Latin, in, into, carn, flesh. So essentially, incarnation is make flesh, to come into flesh in a physical form. So essentially, reincarnation is coming back into flesh. But in my own way of looking at things, for me, reincarnation is re-entering life. It's essentially going back into source. And we are immortal. Energy can't be destroyed, it can only be transferred. So essentially, there is only life. If you walk into nature, look at the flowers blooming. Everything is full of vitality, everything is full of life. So essentially, there is no death in nature. So we are constantly reincarnating. And when we talk of reincarnation, a lot of the old ideas about it have always been that it's something in the past lives, or it's something in the future. So in my mind, reincarnation is happening right now. Everything is happening right now. There is no separation. I call it time continuum. And in the time continuum, essentially, there is only one big moment. And there is no separation, because man created time to govern other men. So when we are living in that timeless state, we are essentially creating reincarnation. Every single second we are reincarnating. And we can even tie it into karma. What is karma? Absolute results of absolute actions, absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of the times it's beautiful when people really realize that and really embody that, that reincarnation is happening right now, that we are living our karma right now. There is no separation. Everything, the three in one, the original trinity, the past, present, and the future, is actually just the one. It's actually all happening simultaneously. In a lot of ancient texts, what happened is that they took away this idea of reincarnation out of these texts. And that's why many people have stopped really remembering that we are reincarnating, because essentially, when enough people realize that, then it becomes dangerous, because enough people actually realize that there is no end. People talk of in these ancient texts, end is near, things are coming to an end, but in essence, everything is a continuous process. Life itself is a continuous process, and it always has been, and this has been known throughout the ages. For eons, people have realized that essentially we are always reincarnating. And some people say, okay, how come certain people are living certain lives? How come certain people carry certain energies? And that is essentially because we are creating it right now. We are creating even the blood chemistry within our body through our attitude this very second. And certain people on this planet have been blessed with abundance. But essentially, abundance is a state of mind. And that's the difference between someone with a lot and someone with nothing. Of course, a lot of people have done wicked deeds to get them. But essentially, in nature, there is no good or bad as we see it. There is only a state of mind. And a lot of the times, when we talk of reincarnation, a lot of times people say, what happens to people who commit murder? What is going to happen to them? But essentially, they are already creating their own karma the moment they commit that crime, because they are breaking universal law. Universal law is the one law which exists, which is fundamental and paramount, is do not kill what you can't create. So someone who has just committed a murder in this incarnation, they are already creating a huge debt that they're going to have to face themselves and look in the mirror, and everything in nature essentially is being recorded. Nature is intelligent. It didn't wait for human beings to come along and say, okay, I'm going to start recording things. You know, we have these fancy cameras and we're recording things on your iPhone, on your your Canon camera, but essentially nature has been recording things for eons, and it's recording our actions. Everything we do is being recorded, and therefore we have to face ourselves. I call it energetic signatures. And for me, that's what reincarnation is. Everything we do is being recorded in the form of an energetic signature. A lot of people even talk of our thumbprint being that energetic signature, because everybody's thumbprint is different. So everybody essentially is carrying a different energetic signature. Nobody is seeing this world in the same way. I can look up at the sky and it's beautiful, it's blue, the sun is shining, but someone else could look at that and they can see it in a whole different frequency, a whole different way. And that just shows us that we are incarnating into this dimension, this 3D reality, with information. Male and female is duality, is division, because essentially we exist within each other. Everything is one. So certain people in this journey, in this incarnation, they are male, but at the same time they have also been female in past lives, which essentially is actually only now. So a lot of us, we have been many things. Some of us have been all kinds of different beings on this planet. But when people just constrict themselves to being one gender, I am male. A lot of people are male, but at the same time they have a deeper propensity to that feminine energy, just as a lot of you have a lot of women on this planet right now, but at the same time they gravitate to a more yang energy, because essentially from the last time, from the last incarnation, they were vibrating at that frequency. So essentially we are interchangeable. We are masculine and feminine at the same time, and we have been both. Some of us, we've been mothers, we've been fathers, we've been all of these things, because essentially we embody the totality of life in its fullness. Everyone has a different blueprint. Everyone has a different encoded information they're coming to planet Earth with. And therefore everyone has different lessons to learn here in Earth school. Some people came to this dimension, this turtle island, which Earth is, to work, and to work for the rest of their life. Some people came here to relax. Some people came here just to meet someone. So certain people, a lot of the times we can wonder why do certain people, why are they born with disabilities and all of these things. But really, life in itself is mysterious. But one way of looking at it is that a lot of things that we see in front of us are beyond our comprehension. And a lot of us, we're seeing it in duality. We're not seeing it in a holistic way. And many of us, we have done many things before, which is only now in essence. We've done many things, and essentially we are coming into this incarnation. We're incarnating to experience a different reality. Some people in this incarnation, they've experienced so much abundance, so the next incarnation they can say, okay, let me experience what it's like to go through hardship. Certain people have committed so many acts of violence, and as well they're incarnating to experience what it feels like to be at the receiving end. So that is how reincarnation is tied into everything. Even from the animals we eat, that shows us that reincarnation is in the now. A lot of the animals we eat, people aren't even emotionally ready to kill it. But the energy transfer, once you butcher a cow or a pig in violence, the energy from that meat, from that flesh, is also reincarnating into you. You're becoming that energy. And that's why a lot of people are experiencing a lot of different energies in their body, because essentially they are taking on other people's energies. And when you kill something in violence, you live in violence, you become violence. And that's how reincarnation is tied into it. A lot of us, we are carrying a huge debt, and essentially the only way to free ourselves is to be in that state of non-judgment and not harm anything on this planet. We can also look at reincarnation like this. A lot of people, they see an old person. The ancient phrase, respect your elders, what does it mean? doesn't just mean respect someone who's 80 years old, because really that's nothing more than a drop in the ocean in eternity. But essentially it means respect your elders, respect nature, because we as children on this planet, nature has been here longer than us. Essentially, we are part of the fabric of everything, but essentially, respect your elders, respect the trees, respect the flowers, respect the waves that you see in the ocean. The sequoia tree, which lives up to over 3,000 years, and some people are 100 years old and they think that's old. There is no time, so essentially there is no age. So when we talk of reincarnation, age is not an indicator of wisdom, because certain people, certain children who are being born, people have talked about them being crystals and indigos, and all of these are just words. But essentially, a lot of children who are coming into this dimension now have information. They are star beings, and they have a tremendous amount of wisdom. In essence, they're here to actually teach their parents, because they are coming into this dimension with knowing, not belief. So just like a lot of old people who are still bound by dogma, by religious dogma, by being in an organization all their life, but at the same time they're 90 years old, but this is all they know, so you can't break their programming. So it's just like when people are looking at age as an indicator of wisdom, they're also flawed at the same time, because there is no age, there is only development. There is only our soul journey, there is only evolution. And that's how reincarnation works. You can have a baby, but at the same time, that baby could have the wisdom of an old man. And you can have an old man with the wisdom of someone who is very new to this earth, what we call old souls. And old souls are ones who actually remember they've been in this dimension before, and they're just coming into this dimension just to share with humanity. You also have walk-ins, who essentially people coming into this dimension who they're not even being born as we see it, coming through a womb, they're just incarnating. You know, people have talked about it as being the Immaculate Conception, but there is just so much. Sometimes it's like you have to question the seemingly impossible. We have to realize in this dimension there are so many hidden truths. Many of us have become desensitized, we've become automatons, and therefore we can't actually feel how intricate this world is. People have talked about it as being the convoluted universe. Convoluted essentially is intricate, the intricate universe. So when we look at reincarnation, we have to look at it as happening right now. And because time is an illusion. If you take a watch into an ocean, if you go down and down, the watch breaks. Because that just shows us that there is no time. Everything is happening right now, and we are reincarnating. We are, through our thoughts, we are creating our own reality right now. Infinite waters, diving deep once again. Stay well, stay healthy, and stay creating your reality, because the power lies within. Peace.
Well, hardly a program goes by here on Coast to Coast where somebody, some guest, doesn't bring up the name of Dr. Brian Weiss. And he is our guest tonight as we talk about his latest work, Miracles Happen. And we're going to get right into that on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Dr. Brian Weiss with us, of course, the nation's foremost expert on past life regression therapy. He's a graduate of Columbia University and the Yale Medical School as well. He maintains a private practice in Miami. His book, Miracles Happen, co-wrote with his daughter, Amy. And here is Dr. Brian Weiss back on Coast to Coast. Hello, Brian.
Hello, George. Good to be back with you again.
Hey, by the way, your daughter went to Washington University in St. Louis.
Yes.
Where my place there, probably about half a mile from that university. It's a great school.
Yes, a fabulous school.
And, you know, so many students have gone into all walks of life after that. I bet she enjoyed that.
She did. And It also has a great medical school, lots of fabulous graduate students there in St. Louis, a wonderful place.
Sure is. I'm back in L.A., but, you know, you're a medical doctor, first and foremost, and you concentrated on past life regression therapy. How did that all start for you?
Well, as you mentioned, I went to Columbia, went to Yale, very traditionally trained, and I was very skeptical about these kinds of things like past lives. I didn't believe in it. I wasn't really exposed to it. I didn't think about it much. And then I had gone through the academic route, and I was chairman of psychiatry at Mount Sinai Medical Center in Miami Beach and professor of psychiatry at the University of Miami School of Medicine. I had a patient, a woman who was suffering from pretty severe phobias, panic attacks, depression, nightmares. And one of her fears was the fear of gagging or choking, so she couldn't take any medication. Normally, I would have used that to treat her symptoms. And so we used traditional psychotherapy, not making too much progress. And I wanted to use hypnosis, which is merely a form of focusing the concentration, but it does help the memory.
Right.
And she had some memory gaps in her childhood, so we used the hypnosis, and she had some qualms about it at first, but overcame those. And focusing then on her childhood, we did find some traumas, but her symptoms remained severe. So when she was in for one of her sessions, after not making much progress with hypnosis and memory work in her childhood, I told her to go back to the time when her symptoms first began. I let her choose. And she went back several thousand years into an ancient Near Eastern lifetime, although she didn't believe in reincarnation or past lives, and I did not either. But this is what she was describing to me with a great deal of emotion, very vivid, lots of details, very visual. All of her senses were engaged. And she drowned in that ancient lifetime. I didn't know if it was fantasy or imagination or metaphor or symbol or a combination of all
of these. And it probably didn't matter because in her mind it happened. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And oddly enough, her symptoms began to disappear almost immediately, just having this memory. For example, she had a lifelong fear of water, of drowning, of deep water. And it probably came from that memory, from that experience. Although I didn't even know that at the time. And that disappeared, and her phobias started to disappear as she would remember other lifetimes, and her fears diminished. And eventually she was cured without, in her case, having to take any medicines. That was the beginning for me.
That was pretty dramatic. So when you saw this happen, what were you thinking? What was going through your mind?
Well, again, being very psychoanalytically trained and traditionally trained, I was thinking metaphor or symbol or imagination, but it didn't fit. I had already treated her for over a year traditionally. She didn't have delusions or hallucinations, or she wasn't abusing any substances. She was not psychotic. She's not borderline, not bipolar. It didn't fit. And then when her symptoms began to resolve just by having these memories, and that doesn't fit for fantasy or imagination, because imagination does not cure such chronic, lifelong symptoms. Some of those she had all of her life, like the fear of gagging, fear of water, and those just disappeared. Her depression got better, her fears got better, her panic attacks disappeared. And so for me, the drama, the importance of clearing up her symptoms, that became paramount. So whatever it was, I was going to study it more and more intensely, because it was helping to cure illness. And for a physician, that's very important.
When you started studying these, were you, even before this episode, this first episode that got you interested in it, were you a believer in it or were you a skeptic?
I was very much a skeptic. I didn't believe in it at all. And, you know, training in psychiatry with studying Freud and Jung, it becomes its own belief system. And that's what I really followed. I was pretty much a conservative psychiatrist. And she didn't believe in it, a Catholic woman from New England. She wasn't in her background either. And yet she had these experiences, and I was watching it, witnessing it, watching her get better. Also, she was coming up with historical facts and details that she had never studied, never learned. And she started telling me very secret, private things about myself, which she could not have looked up, because this was happening around 1980. This was the beginning for me. So about 33 years ago, before the internet, and she was telling me when she died in one of these Middle Ages lifetimes and floated above her body, replicating the near-death experience work of Raymond Moody and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and others, although she had never heard of these people. She told me there were two people there in that space in between lifetimes to see me, my father and my son. And as I said, she didn't know anything about me. I don't even have diplomas in my office, because one theory of psychotherapy is you don't want the patient to know about you. You want them to project their thoughts and feelings and ideas into the therapeutic arena. So not even diplomas hanging, no place to look this up. And she, my father had died a year before she began her therapy. My first child, a son, had died 10 years earlier as an infant of a very rare congenital heart disease. And she was telling me medical details of that heart disease, of my son, of my father's death, and the medical details, nicknames, other private details that nobody knew. Neither of them even had an obituary. There's no place to look it up. And so that was the epiphany for me, I think, watching her get better, watching the symptoms resolve, her coming up with facts and details that she had never learned, and then knowing these very private details about my father and my son. That was too much, even for a skeptical mind like mine.
Yeah, that would do it, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Now, did you have issues with after-death experiences? Did you have issues with even believing that, you know, there was another side after death? Besides reincarnation and other past life issues.
Sure, that I wasn't sure about. I think probably the best term to describe my spiritual views was agnostic. I just didn't know. And I didn't spend much time thinking about those things either. I was young at that time. I was in my late 30s and not really knowing or being able to prove in the scientific way what happens after death. And so I was aware of Raymond Moody and the near-death experience, but I don't know whether I really believed that or accepted it completely, just kind of open-minded skepticism. But then when Catherine, the woman that I described in Many Lives, Many Masters, my first book, and this is the one we're talking about, when she described about my father and my son, when her symptoms began disappearing, when she knew these historical facts and details, it was the opening for me of a whole new psycho-spiritual system, life after death, the other side, different dimensions, because she would talk about those things when she was in these deeper states. When she died in one of these past lives, she would float above, find a light, describe the dimensions, what happens there, and that just seemed to be, for me, somewhat more persuasive now, because she knew about my father and my son. And I remember thinking, if she's right about these things, about my father, about my son, could she be right about these other things, past lives, life after death, the survival of the soul after the death of the physical body, all of these other things that I had not spent much time really contemplating, but now are becoming very important in my life.
Brian, in your new work, Miracles Happen, of course, and we know they do. Of course, the subtitle is The Transformational Healing Power of Past Life Memories. Let's talk about that. You know, I want to get into miracles with you tonight a lot, but let's talk about how people in their past lives can utilize that to make their current life a little better.
Yes, it really is. We call them miracles because they're so different from what so many people believe life is, that they're just the physical body and the brain. And we were finding, me and all the other therapists doing this work, and Amy, my daughter, who's also a therapist, a social worker, so when she does this work, finding the same things, that people would know what happened after they die, that they would float above, often having reunions with loved ones, also getting rid of symptoms, healing physically and emotionally and spiritually and in all of these other ways, becoming very intuitive, psychic. It would change them. They would start to lose their fear of death and dying. They wouldn't grieve so much. And these were, to us, miracles because, wow, there's a whole hidden world out there, a world that many people are not familiar with, although many of the people who listen to your show, to Coast over these years, are more familiar than the average person.
True.
And yet, you know, for the, I'll call it the mainstream person, the person who really hasn't been made aware of through your show, through reading books or in other ways, it's really miraculous to see symptoms disappearing just because you remember a past life trauma, to understand that you've been connected to your grandparents and all the other significant people in your life in past lives. And so you're always being reunited, whether it's in a future life, it's on the other side, and it changes the whole way that people can view death and dying and grief and grieving. So to us, these were miracles, whether it was a physical healing, an emotional healing, getting rid of an illness. It can be a simple thing like healing an infected tetanus shot just with your mind, not with using antibiotics, and something like that. Or a major miracle like a serious illness that just disappears because people have these memories and the memories are curative.
Why is it, Brian, that when people are under extreme stress or anxiety, that they seem to get sicker?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that stress is so dangerous because one of the things it does is depress the immune system. The whole process by which the body protects itself, by which it wards off illness and disease, fights infections, and stress, there's no question, it depresses the functions of the immune system. So that's a very dangerous condition. And you see people under chronic stress developing serious illnesses and cancer too, because the immune system is what fights these illnesses. And then, of course, stress causes the body to secrete chemicals and hormones that can be damaging to the body, that cause hypertension and heart disease, narrowing of the blood vessels, atherosclerosis, and again, a whole panoply of illnesses and diseases. So whatever reduces stress, whatever minimizes it, is healthy for the body. And anything that increases stress over a longer period of time, obviously stress over a very short period of time is not so dangerous. That's how our bodies are designed. You have the fight or flight reaction. You are almost in an accident. You secrete adrenaline. It focuses your concentration, and that's okay. But if stress goes on every day in your life, even when you're not in a life or death situation, that's when it gets dangerous, when it depresses the immune system and causes the secretion of all of these chemicals and hormones. And that's why it's so dangerous, George.
Do you have to remember the past life in order to heal?
No, not at all. Some people remember traumas in childhood or in the current life. Some people, it's just going into these deeper states, these states of relaxation. And I use those deeper states of relaxed, focused concentration to help the memory. But just being in that state, that gets rid of stress. That reduces stress. So that by itself is very healthy. Now, when you have a memory, that's even more powerful. Let's just say, for example, you have a fear of heights, and you then remember in one of these deeper states being thrown off a castle wall in the 12th century, or falling off a cliff or a mountain or something like that, or down a ravine. And when you were in a past life, and when you remember that, then those symptoms disappear. That phobia of heights will disappear because you know that it comes from a past life. It's not something that's going to happen in the future. And so it's even more powerful because you're relaxing, you're getting rid of the stress reaction, and you're remembering the traumatic origins of the symptoms.
Give us, if you can, another example before the break, something that totally convinced you.
Well, one of the examples, a radiologist at Mount Sinai came in to see me suffering from severe back pain. A simple example. This is how it works, though. And he had been to orthopedic surgeons and others without any real success. The back pain was severe. He had to take a medicine for the pain, which he did not like taking because it made him tired and his thinking a little fuzzy. And he was able to remember a lifetime when he was a soldier in a Middle Ages battle. And he's seeing the battlefield. All of his senses are engaged. He's speared in the back in that battle. That's how he died, right in the spot where his back pain is most severe in the current life. And since that time, his back pain disappeared. It's not there. And he's not taking any medicines. It's been years now, functioning well, no surgeries, just by remembering the traumatic origins of that symptom. Another patient, a woman of mine, a professor of physics, very intelligent woman, back pain from severe illness, cancer, mm-hmm. radiation, and in a past life she was kicked in the back by Roman soldiers 2,000 years ago in Jerusalem. She was a man. It broke her back. When she remembered that, her not only did the back pain from the cancer treatment disappear, but she started to regenerate tissues and bones.
Which is unheard of.
Unheard of, but documented in her case by x-rays and radiologic evidence. So very, very interesting how powerful this can be as a healing technique.
What is it about these past lives and these tragedies that occurred that carry on to the current life?
It seems that the symptoms come from these tragedies or traumas. A lot of people who just remember kind of more placid lifetimes or tranquil lifetimes, they may not have that symptom. But those people that I see more of, because being a psychiatrist, I see people with symptoms, they'll come in with symptoms, and those tend to come from these traumas. It's not difficult or painful, traumatic to remember them. It's just like remembering a childhood incident. But when you do remember these traumas, then the symptoms disappear. So when I see people with symptoms, it's often related to traumas. But when I see people who are just merely curious about their past lives, we sometimes call them past life tourists.
We're going to talk more with you, Dr. Brian Weiss, his work, Miracles Happen, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Brian Weiss with us as we talk about their latest work, Miracles Happen. Later on, we'll take phone calls, questions for him. Then later on in the show, I want your miracle stories, of course. Can everybody be hypnotized, Brian? I don't think so, right?
No, not everybody. It's a form of concentration. So some people just are not able to concentrate. Clearly, people with dementia, Alzheimer's, they can't do it. It's a concentration thing. People who are intoxicated or impaired that way cannot do it. Some people with mental problems in terms of mental illness, difficulty concentrating, have difficulty. But about 85% of people can be. So that's most people.
The people who are going through these stages of past lives, reincarnation, do you document it based on faith, or is there something else physical there?
Well, my approach has always been the clinical, coming from medicine, coming from psychiatry. So when we put people into past life regressions, going backwards in time, and they come up with the memories, we try to look at it at two different levels. One, the level of healing. People getting rid of symptoms, people curing emotional or physical maladies. And the other level is that of validation, where maybe they can track down historical facts or details that they start talking about, identifying information. Sometimes people will read a dog tag number from around their necks from World War II or concentration camp number from their arms and be able to track the people that they were. A small percentage of people can speak foreign languages that they've never learned or studied. That's called xenoglossy. It's spelled X-E-N-O, xenoglossy, speaking foreign languages you never studied. So if I have someone under hypnosis speaking medieval German and they never learn German, that's a kind of proof or evidential about the past life. Where is that coming from? So we document it that way. Now, you don't have to believe in reincarnation to have these memories. A lot of people that I see come because they're afflicted by their symptoms or their illnesses, maybe a phobia that's paralyzing their life, and they want to be better. So they say, well, I'm going to try it anyway, even though I don't believe in it. If it helps me, great. And then when they have the experiences, they start believing in it because the experiences can be very clear and very powerful.
Some people, those who are very religious, and I don't want to go there necessarily, but they tend to think that reincarnation or past life regression is almost a sin. How come?
Well, there's a whole history of reincarnation or past life belief systems in the different religions. And many people don't even understand the history of their own religions. And that's normal. It happens. They're told something when they're 2 or 3 or 4. It may be completely wrong. But just because they learned it when they were very young, they think that it's true. And it may not be. You can say, well, I learned that the earth was flat when I was 3 years old, so that must be true. That's what I was taught. But it doesn't mean that it's true at all. So they're not aware that in many of the great religions, belief in reincarnation was present for centuries before it was taken out for political reasons, usually, or that kind of thing. And it was certainly in the Jewish religion for many, many centuries, and still is in the very Orthodox or Hasidic. Reincarnation belief was in Christianity for several hundred years after Jesus.
Oh,
it was acceptable. It wasn't taken out until basically the 5th century, 6th century, for good. And yet, belief in reincarnation has been in Christianity over all these centuries. And today, most of the world does believe in it. If you were born as a Hindu or a Buddhist, you would believe in reincarnation. So that's 1 billion people in India and another 500 million people in China who believe in reincarnation, just because they were born into that culture, and there the belief is accepted. So people get so vehement about what they were taught when they were children, but it really pays to do some research and investigation into your own traditions. And I tell people, well, try it for yourself, because keeping an open mind is really the important part of this all. An open mind means that you're willing to look at new data to evaluate it. And if your mind is closed, then you cannot learn anything new because your mind is closed. You'll reject it. And that's a very narrow and unscientific approach. Science is really keeping an open mind and testing different hypotheses and theorems, and that's what I would recommend to people. But ever since I started doing this work, I've run into closed-minded people, not just in religions, but also in the medical establishment. I was facing a great deal of criticism and even censure movements from the local psychiatric society in Miami.
Really?
Yeah. When I started doing this work and word got out and my book, the first book came out, and there was a censure movement. It didn't get anywhere because I had been here for some years already, had been teaching medical students and psychiatry residents. So a lot of my students defended me, and it didn't get anywhere. But still, you know, this was in the late 1980s, to be brought up on a censure movement just for writing about my observations that done in a very scientific way, that was very backwards. And of course, I was glad it didn't get anywhere because this is observation and validation, and that's the scientific method. But so people are so powerfully opposed sometimes to the different, the new, that they're unable to get past their closed-mindedness.
And that's disappointing, isn't it?
It is. Because they can be very intelligent people, and yet, in some ways, and yet very unintelligent and unsophisticated in other ways. So, it sometimes is shocking to me. I remember being on a television show years ago, and it was a cable CNBC show, something like that. And I go on to talk about past life regression and therapy, and the skeptic that they brought in to sort of debate me with it was Carl Sagan, the astronomer.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so I'm there, and I admire him. I mean, his work, the movie with Jodie Foster, love that. But he was very skeptical about certain things. He was in a skeptic society. And I don't know what he thought he was coming to debate, but we were debating a clinical treatment, past life regression. So we're talking about these things, and he really didn't know much about therapy. And I'm talking about my patients and how they're improving and getting rid of symptoms and coming up with this and speaking foreign languages and knowing historical facts and details, sometimes finding their children from a past life. And he's supposed to be the skeptic, and he's really not making any sense. So finally I say to him, Carl, how are your patients doing? And he said, well, I'm an astronomer. I don't have any patients. And I said, I know. That's why you shouldn't be here discussing this. And if you want to be a skeptic, remember what a skeptic really is. In the Greek sense of the word, a skeptic is someone who offers alternative explanations for phenomena, like could it be this or could it be that? If not past lives, is it tapping into the collective unconscious that Carl Jung wrote about or the Akashic Records? Could it be these other things? Could it just be that we know everything? And I was reminding him what a scientist does and thinks and how an open-minded skeptic should be, not rejecting something that they don't know anything about, but keeping an open mind and asking intelligent questions and offering, as I mentioned, alternative possibilities. And then we got into a really good discussion because I reminded him of the role of a good skeptic. And then he was asking really good questions because he was a very intelligent man. But again, sometimes you find, I'm just shocked that someone like him would have been so close-minded.
Why do we reincarnate? When I was a kid, I used to think it was to reach the heavenly state, to get more perfect all the time. You keep coming back, you try to get perfect.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that's what it is. We reincarnate because we have to learn our lessons to become perfect, to become what the Eastern people call realized or transcendent or enlightened. And it takes more than one lifetime to learn all these lessons. It's too complicated. We have to learn about compassion and nonviolence and kindness and other aspects of spirituality, about patience, about all of these things that can take lifetimes and lifetimes to learn. And then sometimes, you know, a child will be born, have an illness, die very young. When do they have the opportunity to learn these lessons? So they have to come back. We all come back. And it is to become perfect, to become a graduate, so we don't have to come back here anymore. Then we can just stay on the other side, help from the other side, because we're connected, I think, with all other beings. It's a kind of an energy thing. And we help them to graduate too. But I think you're absolutely right. As a child, as children often do, you realize the overall bigger picture.
Can you split a soul where it can be in two bodies?
I think so, yes. Because souls, when we talk about souls, and by that I mean that part of us that doesn't die when the physical body dies, the consciousness that goes on after the death of the physical body, we shouldn't limit a soul by putting or projecting limitations on it. So I think that answers a question, George, that people often are perplexed by and ask me, how can it be that the numbers don't fit, that perhaps there are more bodies on the earth than ever before? Where the population is so large, where do the souls come from then? And the two explanations that come up most frequently in my research, one is what you just mentioned, souls can split and have simultaneous experiences, because eventually it's just all one energy. And the other is that this is not the only place where souls exist, the Earth, that souls can exist in many, many other dimensions, physical dimensions, non-physical dimensions. So Earth is just one of many, many schools, just one tiny little place, the Earth. And so souls can be attracted here from many other places, other galaxies, other universes, non-physical dimensions, and that also explains the population question.
A lot of people want to know about animals, Brian, if animals have souls.
I think so. We have an entire chapter in Miracles Happen about animals, an animal reincarnation, and animal souls. So it's really answered in great depth there. It's about, yes, is basically the short answer, although I'm not sure that the souls of animals are as differentiated as people. But nevertheless, they have souls too. All beings have souls, and animals can come back. And you frequently see the same soul, animal, coming back to the same owner, family, constellation, because an animal's lifetime, for example, a cat or a dog, may be shorter than the human lifetime.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, and so a dog can die, for example, and come back to the same family in a different body as a dog and be reunited. And we see that with people. We see it with dogs, with cats, with animals, horses. All animals have souls also. And can reincarnate.
And let me ask you this. With the animals that come back, and you say sometimes they can enter other animals, do they ever enter a human? I mean, does an animal soul ever become a human?
Well, that probably yes, but I don't know how often that happens. It is certainly in Eastern traditions they talk about that. We've all had lifetimes in different forms. I think, though, that animals can, and it seems like a progression, although sometimes it seems that humans may not be the highest form, although we probably are, even though we don't act that way. But I think that once you're a human, you stay a human. I know the Eastern religions speak differently about it, but I think that we stay as humans when we reach that level. And we may come back here. That's kind of the punishment, the karma, whatever you want to call it. We still have lessons to learn. That's what it means. But I don't think we go back into animal bodies, or I should say more accurately, that I don't find that. And it could be simply that we don't remember lifetimes as animals.
Has anybody under hypnotherapy ever said that they were?
They have, but it's rare. And then you wonder, well, is it metaphor? Is it symbol? Is it actual memory? Hard to prove that one because you can't really validate it. But the answer is yes, but not commonly.
Brian, for people who want to get the book Miracles Happen, available everywhere, it's published by Harper One. It's a great read with Amy. Did she have fun doing this?
Yeah, we had great fun. Amy, my daughter, she's a wonderful writer, also a therapist. So she helped enormously. We collected some of our most astounding and best stories and cases of people who had been attending our workshops and our patients, and we put them into this book, and I commented on each one of them because it's important to understand what's going on. But these represent some of the most interesting cases. And so it was great fun working with her. It was such a joy. We would sit there and, like, complete each other's thoughts.
That's great.
It was great.
When you work in tandem like that, that's very special, isn't it?
Very special.
Free will. They say we have it. Do we really?
It's a complicated thing. You know, it seems that we do, but it may be at a higher level. Everything is known by the wisdom, the intelligence of that level. But we certainly seem to have free will here. But we also have destiny. And we know destiny points occur, like meeting a certain person that's going to influence your life. That's destiny. But what you decide after you meet that person, are you going to work with them, marry them, reject them? Those are the free will parts. So I think we do have free will, but at some level, maybe there's a higher wisdom that already knows the decision we're going to make.
Maybe they do. And can you, as you look into the past with regression, have you ever looked into the future?
Yes, it's a fascinating area, a whole big area. I wrote a book, Same Soul, Many Bodies, about doing future progressions, going into the future. We call regressions going into the past, progressions going into the future, because there really is no time. There is no time. On the earth, there's time, but beyond that, no time. And probably or possibly these lifetimes are going on in parallel.
All right, stay with us, Brian. We're coming back for more with you on Coast to Coast AM.
Okay, Moores, we're back. This is very, very interesting information. And if you have any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand, open up the line. And if you have any information in regarding someone that you know of that may have had a past life experience or something of that nature, go ahead and raise your hand. I love to hear that. I have had quite a few experiences with people involved in this type of situation, and I have studied it in the past. I had a book on life after death, and you know, it's pretty much it's very, very interesting, and I keep finding the same components over and over that's wrapped around this particular type of circumstance, which makes it extremely interesting for us to understand. And I think it's actually vital to understand. And every time I look around, something happens to remind me of the fact that this type of thing does exist. It is real. It is happening today. It's happening with everyone, and regardless of who you are, it does happen. So if you got questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. We open up the line.
Fellas, I wonder what you're mad if I talk to you a minute. You know, sometimes we have a tendency, or should I say we forget what a woman needs every now and then. That is, if you want to keep your thing together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Listen to me now.
Do the things that keep a smile on the face. Say the things that make you feel better every day. Man, you got to stay on your P's and Q's. If you don't, the woman you can easily lose. Smile on a face. Check a little.
one of the biggest problems that people inside the United States have when it comes to their mortgage is they don't understand the backdrop of the bankruptcy of the United States and the House Joint Resolution that's already been put in place for the remedy. Now, if you can understand this, the only thing that you will need is to formulate the correct documents and serve them. It's just that simple. Now, there's a series of documents that we have available for you at www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Once you get there, before you do anything, call me. Let's find out where you are so we'll know how to deal with the situation. Contact me, Tahaka Montiel Bay, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then we can get you over.
With Dr. Brian Weiss, and of course, this hour we'll take your phone calls, questions for him. Next hour we'll take your miracle stories right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Brian Weiss with us, your questions, your stories as well. Brian, is it difficult for people in past life regressions to pick up times and dates? I mean, how do they know when the era might have been?
Well, sometimes, and it depends on the person, sometimes when they're having a vivid visual experience, they can look and see the styles of dress, architecture. They'll get a pretty good idea for the era, for the place even, for the time. Sometimes I'll have them pick up a newspaper and look at the date, that kind of thing, and they'll give the date. And some people just have a year like flash before their eyes when they're having the experience. So it depends on the person, but it's not that difficult. I don't always go for that exact year because sometimes that brings the left brain into it too much, and I want them to stay in a deeper state and stay in the experience. But if they're around a newspaper or something or a building, I'll have them describe that to me, or the clothes, the style of dress, looking at other people, what the houses look like, cars or transportation or carts or horses or whatever there is. They'll get a pretty good idea for when it is.
If there are other beings on other planetary systems and that this primordial soup in the universe is the same, I then think you have to assume that there are souls in those other beings.
Yes, pretty much, George. That it seems that souls are souls, wherever it is, whatever universe it is, whatever dimension it is. But the physical bodies can change greatly, yet the souls, that energy, that's pretty much the same. That's true. That's what I find also. And you know, it's so vast, this. It's not even one universe. As modern physics shows us now, universes are just bubbling up. We're just the tiniest little speck here. But our souls, that's the stuff of all of the universes of which everything is comprised. And that's our connection to all that is. It's such a strange collection of universes. You know, one subatomic particle can change its polarity here, and billions and billions of light years away, another particle responds to that instantly. It's so much more complex and beautiful than we can even begin.
How many people
understand.
Think that they were famous people in the past, Brian, as opposed to just somebody?
Not many. That's rare. That's one of the myths of this whole thing that I run into, like the numbers don't fit, or how can someone know a BC date? That disproves everything. Well, it doesn't disprove it because it's memory. So if you see yourself building an ancient pyramid, you know that it's BC. You're speaking to me in that deeper state in English, which wasn't even invented yet. So it doesn't disprove anything. And those are the myths that come up, that everyone is Cleopatra or Napoleon, and it's not true. Most lifetimes are very common people, workers, servants, farmers. And we don't find famous people. It's very rare.
All right, to the phones we go. Roger, truck driving in Indiana, first-time caller. Hey, Raj, thanks.
Hi, George. Pleasure speaking with you. First-time caller. And great show tonight.
Glad you got in. Go ahead.
I have a couple questions for Brian. First of all, your work is fascinating. I've really been skeptical on this, but after listening to you, you're really bringing things to light.
Thank you.
I have a couple questions. I don't know if you can answer them. I've always been very fascinated with the Shroud of Turin, and in my opinion, I've always thought that our souls are basically, all of us, I should say, are all energy. And would you say that it's possible that that's what happened to Jesus? And when he left the tomb, he burst into energy? And that's why we have that image on a Shroud of
Turin?
Sure.
I think that's possible, Brian, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely possible. I agree with Roger. We're all energies. And we have these... our nature is so much more than just the physical, than just the body or the brain. And all of that is possible because there's no limit to what energy can do.
None at all.
None.
There was definitely a burst of energy. If the Shroud's authentic, and I think it is, something dramatic happened there.
Yes. And it would still possess a great deal of that energy.
Yep.
That power is still there. And those are the miracles that we're talking about, too. This type of thing is probably not a miracle when you think about it in terms of transcendent energies and all this, but we just don't understand it yet. So to us, it's a miracle.
When you say miracles, are you also talking about angels?
All of these things, yeah. That would be, if an angel came and talked to me, that's like a miracle because it's outside of the ordinary five senses. And we've had stories of that kind of thing, and it happens all the time. You know, someone is stranded in a blizzard and would die of hypothermia, and then someone knocks on their car door window and opens the car and takes them to a farmhouse nearby. And then, you know, in the morning, there are no footprints, nothing. That person seemingly doesn't exist. Those kinds of angelic visits people experience all the time. Now, one thing, George, they often don't want to talk about it, people, because nobody wants to be considered weird or strange or crazy or different. And yet these wonderful and beautiful stories happen all the time. So, yeah, it's a miracle. Someone came and rescued you from your car and took you to a farmhouse and you didn't die of hypothermia. And to me, yeah, those are real. And they're miracles at the same time.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Sylvia is in Miami, Florida. Hi, Sylvia. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Good evening to both of you. Dr. Weiss, I met you years ago at a bookstore in the Kendall area in Miami.
Yes,
when you wrote your second
possible.
Book. And I've got your autograph, and I gave you my father's book. It was his autobiography. It was called One Man, One Battle, and I was very much interested in having a regression done, and I thought maybe if you read his story and, you know, and read what an amazing life he had had and the fact that I've been in exile twice in my childhood, I've had a lot of amazing things happen, and I just, I haven't really been able, I've had... miracles. I've had angels help me with certain situations. I've spent a lot of my life I don't know where. I was in the music business, but I ended up meeting a lot of very important people, a lot of celebrities, a lot of stars. It's just been a crazy life. But at the same time, I'm searching for what the purpose is for all of this. I've been wanting to carry on my dad's his name and what he stood for, which was anti-communism, and he fought for the rights of everyone. And, I mean, he started this when he was very young in 1925. And then I've had this crazy life, and I don't know if you still take people as far as regressions or how I could go about doing that. Or I know what you said about the relaxing and putting yourself in another state, which after being an athlete and dancing and that type of stuff, I learned – you know, how to, you know, do like out-of-body type experience. But I've never been able to reach, like, the answers as to why I'm here, as to what, and I'm going through, like, a very bad situation with all the things I've done in my life and all these incredible things. Now I find myself at an age where I, instead of doing well in my life. I'm like losing my home. It's in the foreclosure. I'm trying to put my life together. It's like finding a job. For some reason, things are happening where I try to stay positive. I mean, I take care of animals. I mean, I do all these. I'm so involved in politics. I'm so involved in what's going on in the world. I'm constantly.
Well, let's squeeze in a quick question here. Go ahead.
So my quick question is just how could I go about finding out what the heck is going on in my life that after all I've been through and all I've done with all this knowledge that I have acquired, all this energy that I have and this passion for so many good things, how can I find the answer as to what my whole purpose is here? What happened in my past life that now I feel like I'm paying for, or I don't know, just so many answers.
That's a big question. There's so many facets to it. I don't see individual people anymore because I'm traveling so much and writing and yet I do workshops one day and if you wanted to experience regression, that type of thing, I have a website. It's up on Coast to Coast site. It's just my name, brianweiss.com. And that website has my schedule. So if I'm doing a workshop in Miami or wherever a listener is, I just did one in Washington this past weekend, Washington, D.C., people can come, spend a day, have regression experiences in the workshop. The book Miracles Happen is a collection of these experiences that people have had in workshops. So you can find the schedule there on the website and come to one of these days and you'll have experiences and that'll start to, you know, hopefully sort things out for you and help a little bit.
Let's hope so. Let's go next to Jay in South Bend, Indiana. Hey, Jay, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Question.
Sure thing.
Is any past regression memories we have here only reflective of what we know from here? I'm asking, has anyone brought back any memories or past lives from other dimensions? We know they exist.
Well, yeah, absolutely. That's we were starting to talk about that, George and I. When I talked about that other book I wrote, Same Soul, Many Bodies, about going into the future and progressions, but also it was very interesting because people sometimes in doing regressions, they talked about coming here in sort of vast migrations from other star systems. So that would be a physical kind of dimension, but this was tens of thousands or even longer years ago, long, long time ago. And sure, they do talk, not often, because most symptoms come from lifetimes on Earth more recently, but occasionally some people would come through and very credible people and talk about these migrations or other places. And sometimes their stories sort of confirm each other's, even though they've never shared notes, they don't know each other, but what they're telling me is very similar. So the answer to Jay is yes. Yes, this is not the only place, and sometimes people do describe these other places.
How come when people experience these NDEs, near-death experiences, they don't want to come back?
Because this is the hard place, George. I think Earth is the place in these physical bodies we have, and just like in Sylvia's call, we have so much trouble here. We have illness, disease, death, loss, pain. All of these things, it's very hard to be in a physical body. And on the other side, we don't have that. It's so much more beautiful. We don't have illness. There's no death. There's no disease. You're being reunited with loved ones. Of course, it's and I think that's our home in many ways. And this is our school, a tough school in other ways. They don't want to come back because it's nicer on the other side. It's easier. But this is a place where we can learn important and profound lessons. So we have to be here in our physical bodies learning these lessons.
Let's go to Andrew in Los Angeles. Hey, Andrew, thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, George. You're a great patriot. Dr. Weiss, you make a lot of sense, and I think you have a very interesting topic. I'm not sure one way or the other if this phenomena is an actual fact or if it is a deception. So I'm not prejudging, but two things. Number one, have you ever looked into the possibility of using the reverse speech technology to find any hidden messages that people may have in the course of your interview with them under hypnosis? And secondly, did you ever verify using, let's say, trustor technology, see if the person you're speaking to is in fact telling the truth, if they are really who they say they are. And number three, if demonic possession or, you know, multiple personality disorder is a fact, a reality, isn't it possible that you could be speaking to some other entity and not know it for a fact? And I appreciate your work. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yes, Andrew, probably the answer to the first part is no, I haven't done that kind of technology. Because what a regression session is, a person goes into a deeper state, but it's not like they're in some far away, distant place where they've left their body and someone else is there. They're just concentrating. So we all do that. It's like going to the movies and concentrating on the movie and paying such rapt attention that you're not hearing the people eating popcorn next to you. It's not a mysterious state. It's just concentration. And then they come up with memories. And the memories may be recently, like someone who's 30 years old now who died in World War II, as I mentioned, reading off a dog tag number or giving military information, names and regiments and that kind of thing, of the person that they were in a past life. It's not demonic or that kind of thing. It's very, very plain and very simple. And they have these memories, and then they get rid of symptoms. And they talk about love and compassion and kindness, things that I don't think any self-respecting demons would talk about in that way. But it's really about healing and about getting rid of symptoms, physical symptoms, emotional symptoms. We document it in that way. Sometimes people have found their children from a past life, and they know all about the children's histories, even though they are just meeting them for the first time. There's a woman in England, Jenny Cockell, who wrote a book about this and who I met in the 90s, who was 41 years old, and I found her in the green room of a television show we were doing a documentary about, with her 85-year-old son and her 81-year-old daughter. And she had enough memory to track them down in Ireland. She was from England, and tell them all about their childhoods because she was their mother, and that sort of thing. So that's how it works. That's what a regression is. And we don't do the heavy technology, lie detector, that, because they're coming up with things that can be validated. And a lot of people just want to get rid of their symptoms. So that's the level that we work at. And again, my approach is not the religious one. It's the clinical. That's the scientific.
Brian, we talked right before the break last time about going into the future. How does that work?
Yeah, I had, you know, people come to see me and they would have precognitive dreams, dreams of the future.
Yeah.
Some people won the lottery that way. They dream numbers or they're amazing, amazing stories of things that they would see in the dream that then came true. Sometimes they're very simple things. Who's going to win the World Series or the Super Bowl? But very, very accurately, sometimes the big lottery even. And I just tried to understand, how can people know the future that way? And I thought, well, if they can dream about it, then why can't I put these people into deeper states and go into the future the same way? And we can. And again, I think it's because there's no time. Or perhaps it's all simultaneous, or they can jump time. So a future life in that way is more like a parallel life. It's already going on, and they can know these things. A lot of people have that. Sometimes deja vu is because you've looked into the future, and then when you encounter it, it feels familiar.
Yes, right.
And that kind of thing. And many of your listeners on Coast to Coast have had precognitive dreams. They've dreamt of a meeting that would take place or running into someone, and then or some event that happened. And I know I've had that several times, too. So it's entirely possible, George, to go into the future, too. And once again, modern physics is confirming this.
We're going to take some more of your questions with Dr. Brian Weiss next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I want to invite all of you to take a free view of our television show. Simply go to this website, www.beyondbelief.com. It's that simple. Our guest this week, Lee Spiegel, who writes for the Huffington Post on UFOs, another great phenomena. He was a great guest as well. You can watch that and a number of other shows 10 days free. beyondbelief.com. And back with Brian Weiss. Brian, how far have you progressed people into the future?
Well, I was doing some research doing that too, and one of the projects I did, just because I do a lot of these large workshops with many people in it, I would take the whole group into the future in three different stops, so to speak. One about 100 to 200 years in the future. The middle period was about 500 years in the future. And the last part, the far future, 1,000 years or more. I didn't want to take people in groups into the future of their current life because there could be some anxiety about that. Are they going to be ill or lose someone or something like that? So in these groups, I took people to those three places. And then I would give them a questionnaire and see if there was commonality or consensus or correlation. And we were finding that there was, especially for the far future, the one that's 1,000 years from now, where the Earth seemed very idyllic in many ways, very green, except there were some areas that were off limits. Some things had happened. The population was much reduced. That was a very common finding. It was in much more balance and harmony than it is now. And people could communicate telepathically. There was no illness the way that we have it now, no wars, no violence, much smaller population, though. Something happened in that middle period, perhaps. And we got the feeling that that middle period, it was not determined yet what would happen, because the population could decline in many ways. For example, people could voluntarily decide to have fewer children.
Sure.
And that would be a kind of non-cataclysmic, non-violent way. Or maybe the fertility rate declined because of pollutants or other factors in the environment. I don't know. I don't think it's been determined yet. It's a lot will have to do with what we talked about earlier, our free will and that kind of thing. But we have to get this planet into a lot better, how to put it, condition than it is now. I don't think anything is really imminent right now, nothing to worry about that way. But if this research is showing that if we don't do something, then a couple centuries from now could be a difficult time. We come out of it fine at the end with a much reduced population. But something in that middle period could be troubling unless we take responsibility for this planet that we live on.
Brian, of all these things that you've looked at, what do you find to be still the most perplexing? What's out there?
Oh, that's a good question. I see the whole system now as this spiritual realm where we're souls and we come into physical bodies because we have these lessons to learn, just as you knew when you were a child. The perplexing thing is why we don't learn these lessons. We must be a very stubborn species. We just resist. We continue to be violent. We continue to not look ahead at the shared future. We're ruining the planet in many ways now. We don't have to do these things, but we do it. We treat each other very, very badly. We perpetuate violence and wars, and we don't have to do that. We should be kinder. We should be more compassionate. We should recognize, as the Christian mystic Teilhard de Chardin said, that we're not human beings having a spiritual experience here, but we're spiritual beings having a human experience. That captures our real nuance. So it perplexes me at one level why we're so stubborn, why we keep our heels dug in and not learn these important lessons. And on the other hand, as a psychiatrist, I know why. We have fears, we're taught certain things, we have egos, all of these things get in the way and sort of block our progress. But we really do have to wake up. We have advanced so much scientifically now that we have the capacity to ruin this planet. Pollution, wars, radioactivity, all of these things that we can do now that we couldn't do in the Middle Ages. And so we have to sort of become more responsible. And more responsible to ourselves, to each other, and to this planet. And that perplexes me. Why there's such an obstacle to this common knowledge?
All right, back to the phones. Donna, Philadelphia. Here we go. Hi, Donna.
Hello, George. Good evening. Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Weiss, I wanted to tell you how much I really appreciate your work. I read your book, Many Lives, Many Masters, and as well as many other of your books as well. And like you were just saying, I realized that, number one, I realized through your work and others' work that we tend to incarnate in groups of people. And there are lessons that we learn from each other, no matter who's playing what role. If somebody's a parent, a child, we're always here to learn a lesson in whatever capacity we can. And number two, I noticed that our actions have far-reaching consequences, that, you know, we're not only affecting the person that we, you know, we're acting against, but we also it also affects other people as well. And I got that message as well through your work with near-death experiences, your work about that. And I also wanted to back up what you said about people not realizing that they're famous people. I have had a few past-life regressions. Never once have I been anybody famous, but I've learned a lot from those lives, and they've cured me of, I guess you could say cured me of some, you know, certain physical ailments I had and a lot of questions I had about troubled relationships with people and the rest of that. I guess the only real question that I have for you, outside of being very appreciative of your work, and I thank you very much for all you have done, is how has this work affected you on a personal level as a human being, as well as a doctor?
Okay, that's a good question too, Donna. And what Donna's saying is very, I agree with this. What you found, having the symptom resolution, understanding more, but it does affect you, it affects me. For me, it's made me more patient. It's certainly reduced my fear of death and dying and all of these things, because I see this every day that we don't. It's made me more open-minded. It's made me realize, since I've had my own past life experiences, and I've been in different nationalities and races, it's made me see that we change religion, we change nationality, we change sex, because we have to learn from all sides. I do agree with you, too, that we reincarnate in groups because we're learning our lessons that way, and people that we've reincarnated with before know how to push our buttons, and we teach each other that your relationship may change with them. Your grandmother may come back as your grandson, that kind of thing, and that's okay, but it's the same soul. So for me, it's really opened up incredible vistas. It's enabled me to meet wonderful people from all over the world. And it's encouraged me to begin to meditate and to do these stress reduction things. So it's changed my life in so many ways. And realizing that I'm not just this physical body and this brain. There's so much more to me. There's so much more to you and to all of us. And that we're all connected. You're right. The consequences go way beyond just the one person we're affecting.
Where's the future take all of this, Brian? What's going to happen next?
Well, again, there's that free will part. I think it's not, how to put it, it's not fixed yet. There are probably many futures, George, probable futures and possible futures. And our task as a species, our task on this planet is to choose the best future, individually, collectively, for ourselves and also for the planet. And it's not fixed. We can go in many different directions because there are many possible futures. I think now that when people make a major decision in their life, they go off into one future. But maybe a part of them is still going along a parallel dimension, a parallel future. Again, the numbers, it gets staggering when you think of universes bubbling up. That almost implies an infinity of possible futures. So it gets staggering to the human mind to try to comprehend how that works. But the simple way is to choose the kinder way, the more compassionate way, the wiser way for the planet, for ourselves, for our communities. And that will guarantee that a better future becomes the more probable future.
All right, let's go to Gadadriel in Carver, Washington on the wild card line. Hi there, Gay.
Hi, can you hear me?
I sure can.
All right, this is Gadadriel, and I'm in Oak Harbor, Washington. Thanks for taking my call. What I wanted to share is an experience I had with a marriage breaking up very amicably, and I had this fear of leaving this man. It was an unnatural fear because there was no reason for me to feel this way. So I had a regression and went to a life where I saw myself wringing my hands, walking back and forth in a stone building, probably in England, and he rushed in and said, like took me by the arm and said, "Will you come with me?" And I said, "No," and he stuck a dagger in my chest.
Oh.
Right in the middle of my chest. So since we were amicable, I told him this story, and he said, "That's incredible. You know that when we argue, you hold your hand over that spot in your chest."
Uh-huh.
And that every time I see you do that, it makes me angry, and I didn't know why.
Analyze this, Brian.
Yeah, that's a very common story that I hear. People have been with us before. We've been in these relationships before. And sometimes it gets carried over, of course, into the present relationship. So they're holding the hand over the site of the previous mortal wound. Then we could ask, you know, are there symptoms for breathing, heart, because of the chest trauma? But another example of this kind of thing is I'll see a parent who's like overprotective of their child, way overprotective, beyond the normal, no reason really for it in this life. And it turns out in the regression that they had lost that child in a past life. So they're resolved never again. It's not going to happen. And they get overprotective in this life. Or people may be very overweight, and it turns out that they died of starvation in a past life, and they're resolved not again. It's not going to happen, and so they keep the weight on as a kind of protection. And so what we're talking about here in relationships or with weight or some other symptom, those are all sort of carryovers from past life interactions, and this is a very good example of it. We've all been killed, and we've all killed other people in our past lives. The key is to stop doing that and to treat each other with more kindness, with nonviolence, and you're doing that in this life, so you're making progress. That's very good.
Isn't that remarkable how all that works?
It is, and it's sort of almost like a detective thing. We see these symptoms, and then they piece it together when they do the regressions.
Okay, we've got time for a few more calls, and then next hour I want your miracle stories, and Brian, maybe you can analyze them for us.
Sure.
Let's go to T, truck driving in California. Welcome to the show. Hi, T.
Hello. Hey. Thank you very much,
sure
first
thing.
Off, taking my call. Okay, Dr. Rice, I just have a quick question, but I want to explain something really quick, too. I have a recurring dream where I'm on a spaceship, basically. I never really actually see my physical body, but I know I'm being spoken to repeatedly in the dream, you know, over the course of the dream. And I've always felt out of place. Call me crazy, but I've always felt out of place right here. Do you think that you can have this reincarnation through dreaming? And as you were speaking about earlier, you know, you're talking about space or UFOs or aliens. Do you think that's physically possible that you, like you said, could be reincarnated from being something or somebody else in a distant universe, and now I've been slung here on Earth? Okay, and I will take my answer off the air, and thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Go ahead, Brian.
Yes, T. Absolutely. Sometimes another way of experiencing past lives, for example, not just through regressions, but dreams, another way. Sometimes it's spontaneous, like deja vus. You're traveling in a city you've never been in before, and you know your way around and where the old church was and the secret room in the church. These are non-hypnotic ways. So that dream, the recurrent dream, such as in a spaceship, that could actually be from an actual experience.
in another lifetime. And then the soul gets into the earth here, and I would say it gets stuck here because you create lessons or karma. You maybe did something, and you need to then reincarnate on the earth. So absolutely it's possible. These recurrent dreams are sometimes flashbacks or images or scenes or remnants or little bits and pieces of past lives, and it can be. And yes, other people have talked about lifetimes in other dimensions or galaxies other than the Earth. So everything T is talking about is entirely possible.
Next up, we've got Hank in New Mexico. Here you go, Hank. Thanks for calling.
Greetings to you both from the luscious high desert here in New Mexico. Okay. We are, I wanted to ask you both, I'm in my mid-20s, and I've always been told that I was always more mature, I was always wiser since I was a young kid, and I've been called an old soul many times, and part of me having a lack of a larger social circle, I believe, is because of the old soul part. I wanted to get your take, Dr. Weiss, on specifically the connection between, of course, what you're talking about, old souls, and with my generation, my millennial generation, the indigo child, if there's a relation to that. I'll take my answer off air, and I'd like to remind our listeners that a free people are a peaceful people. Thank you.
Well done. Thank you. Go ahead. Yes.
Well, for Hank, I think all souls are ageless. It's this immortal, eternal. But what we call an old soul is one that's been on Earth for a long time, has been reincarnating here for a long time. They know their way around in a way that a new soul, one newer to the Earth, wouldn't. But this younger generation, there are some very talented and wise beings coming, reincarnating here, I think because the Earth needs it. Whether you call them indigo children or some other name, just think of it, as I think, as wise beings, wiser, because we're in trouble here. Science has been developing so rapidly ahead of the kind of ethical and moral development of people making decisions with scientific that could be dangerous in the wrong hands. They're not as advanced ethically or morally as science is advancing. So we need these wiser souls, beings, wisdom on the Earth, and they're being born here because the Earth needs it. So Hank probably falls into that group. T a little bit also. Don't feel quite comfortable here, but they're bringing a wisdom to take care of the planet and the people, and that's really, really important.
Brian, let's take the miracle stories when we come right back. And, of course, Dr. Brian Weiss, those of you on hold from last hour, the two of you will take your phone calls, your questions, but then let's get into your miracle stories when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Dr. Brian Weiss, noted author, of course, and researcher, and also clinician. Miracles happen. They do. They happen all the time, Brian, don't they?
Yes, absolutely, all the time.
You know, when these miracles occur, do we manifest them, or is there some outside influence doing this to us?
I believe that it's an outside influence, even though we're all connected. So at some level, you know, everything is energy. But actually, they seem to be happening from outside of us. It's in the religions actually have a term or a word for this called grace, that is, the reaching down of a hand from the other side to help us all out. I think it's more like that, wherever the hand is coming from, the higher dimensions. But I don't think it's just from within us. It's not just manufactured by us. It's not a psychological thing. It's really from without.
Let's go to Richard, Long Island, New York, who was waiting last hour. Hey, Richard, go ahead.
Hey, George, great show, and thanks for taking my call.
You are welcome.
Yeah, Dr. Weiss, I just wanted to say to you, sir, what a refreshing breath of fresh air you are from somebody that came from a traditional medical and psychotherapeutical background to be exposed to these things as a skeptic and to be open enough to let them in and realize all that you've realized. I'm going to ask you to do something. If you don't want to do it, it's okay. But I kind of wanted you to differentiate when you're talking about things carrying on beyond this life between the soul or consciousness and personality and ego, those three entities. Because just like we drop the skin, we don't take some of the things that we call me beyond this life with us. And I also would like you to comment if, when you regress any of these people and they go into the previous life, you notice a totally distinct, as a psychotherapist, notice a totally distinct personality change when they're in the other existence of the other life, recounting it.
Both, Richard. You can see personality change for sure, but there seems also to be some element of a continuity. You're right to differentiate those terms. When I think of soul or consciousness, I think of that more pure in that sense, that part of us that goes on after the death of the physical body. But our ego, that's sort of our personalities. These are more temporary states. These are dropped pretty much when we go to the other side. Or if they persist, they do not persist for very long, whereas the soul is the immortal part, the eternal part. And it's such a sublime thing. We can't even really describe it in words. Whereas the ego or the personality, that's the part of us that often has to deal with the day-to-day events we in our lives. Our ego is how we act, and our temper and our rational abilities, our executive functions, our values, those things. The soul doesn't have that in a way. It's much more global, much more pure in that sense. So it's hard to put into words, because sometimes I notice when people go to the other side, when they die in one of these past lives during a regression, they may feel that they have to eat, for example, on the other side, and they don't. But temporarily they may stay with that bit of delusion, and then they find out, no, I don't need this. I don't need to eat. I'm a spiritual being now. I don't have a physical body. No need for food. But if they wanted to eat, food would be there. It would be fabulous, and yet it's just a temporary state. So we shed, in the way like shedding a skin, we shed the personality, we shed the ego. We may not do it immediately, but pretty soon after we go to the other side, because the other side is much more pure, and we realize we don't need these artificial constructions anymore. So that, in a nutshell, is the differentiation between ego and soul.
You're still doing workshops, aren't you?
Yes, I still do workshops. I kind of teach in that way, George. I still go around the world doing these workshops, and they're experiential workshops. So we'll do group regressions in the workshops. I'll take the whole group back. It's very safe to do that. And other exercises, and I'll talk. I can't see people in the office anymore. It just got too much. So I train therapists to do this work. They come from all over the world, and we do that twice a year. And I'll do workshops. As I mentioned, I just did one in Washington, recently in Vancouver. I do it in New York, in Miami, in Japan, in South America, in Europe, in Italy every year. There's so much interest in this from all over the world that it's, I can't even go to a fraction of the places that invite me. But so I just go where I feel I can speak to a large number of people and do that efficiently. So that's why I thought that like Sylvia, who called earlier, should come to a workshop. She'll have her own experiences.
Some people think that they're from Atlantis, Brian. What do you think?
Actually, some people are. That some people have described this, what we think of as an ancient civilization, even though it was quite advanced in many ways, working with energies. There's something to it. Too many people have talked about this civilization in wherever in the Atlantic or the Eastern Mediterranean, even that may have influenced Egyptian culture and knowledge and wisdom. in its demise. And they'll also talk about a civilization that was in the Pacific, and they'll call it Mu or Lemuria or words like that. And yet people, even if they can't name it, they're describing a similar culture. So I think there is something to that. And years ago, I regressed Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, a famous psychiatrist who was a pioneer with the NDE, the near-death experience. And she had a very strong and powerful Atlantean lifetime.
How do you regress someone? What's the technique?
What I do, George, is I have them, and I just, it's funny, last week I was, I regressed Katie Couric for her television show, and she had an experience. And it's, she was asking, what do I do? How do I do this? And I said, well, all you have to do is sit comfortably. You can sit or lie down, close your eyes. Then I take them through a muscular relaxation just from facial muscles, jaw, relaxing completely, neck, shoulders, back, down the body. Then I have them imagine, I deepen the state a little bit, certain techniques for deepening, have them imagining themselves in a beautiful garden or place of safety. And then I say to them, let's begin going backwards in time. Now, they're already very relaxed, very deep state of relaxation. The mind is focused. And I say, basically, in a few moments, I'm going to count down from 5 to 1. Let's go to childhood. I usually start with that. And let yourself remember a pleasant or important childhood memory, just to show them that they can do this. And they'll do that. And then the person having the regression can talk, even while they're deeply relaxed, and they can tell me what they're experiencing. So if they're in a childhood memory, for example, I'll have them tell me where it is, home, school, vacation, grandparents' home, wherever it is, outside in the backyard or inside, and describe what they're remembering. And then we'll go further back to maybe infancy. And then I'll take them back into a past life, just the same technique, going through a door, many different types of what we call bridges to go back. And then they'll start to remember that also.
Did you ever have a situation, Brian, where you could not reach someone, you could not bring them out of it?
No, I could always bring them out of it because it's just concentration. You can't get stuck. That's sort of, again, one of those myths about it.
Yeah.
Scary only myths. One time, really.
Aha!
Yes.
So only one time.
Temporarily.
You
it
never
was someone
came back.
Who was so relaxed, someone with a great deal of stress and tension in their lives, a woman and a patient of mine. And I knew the next patient was obsessed with time, that if she didn't get her full session, hour, she like was counting minutes. And most people don't do that, but the next patient did. So when I was trying to bring this woman out of it, she didn't want to come out. She was so relaxed for the first time in a long time. And I whispered gently into her ear, if you don't come out now, I'm going to have to charge you for an extra session.
Huh.
And she was right out of it. So it was just her wanting to stay in the relaxed state. She didn't care if she was running over time-wise. So really, you can't get stuck because it's concentration. That would be like going to the movies and watching Ben-Hur or Spartacus and getting stuck in ancient Rome. You can't get stuck because you're just watching. You're concentrating. You're not actually there.
Our next up, we go to Joe in Bellevue, Nebraska. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hey, good morning. This is Joel.
Joel, okay.
Joel from Bellevue.
All righty.
It's one of those miracle stories. I was walking home one night. It was early Wednesday morning, about 3 a.m. or so, and nobody was out but me, and the car was coming by, and it hit me, and I ended up through the windshield.
Oh, jeez.
And the driver took off, and it just so happened that we got a volunteer fire department here, and they had went on a mistake call or a call that was no good. They were called back, and they were on their way back to the station, and they came across the accident. And
right there at the right time.
Yeah, and I ended up, all I had was a few scratches. My whole head and shoulder went into the windshield, through the windshield.
Wow.
And it just so happened that they had come by at the right moment. And
what would happen, Joel, had they not come by?
Well, probably would have died because I was, you know, a few scratches, but I was still bleeding pretty good.
Yeah, bleeding out on us.
It just, you know.
All right, Brian, analyze that one.
Well, it falls into, I don't think that there really are coincidences.
No, me neither.
That here, you know, everything had to fall right into place at that moment in the dark to find Joel, to that fire rescue vehicle, whatever, to be there. Because that was a pretty violent accident, going through the windshield, getting cut by the glass, all of that going on. And, you know, that's what I hear these things all the time, that if you think statistically, the odds of that happening, a false call going in, so they're on the road where Joel is injured, it's just such a improbable combination of events that I have to think there was some destiny involved in that. It just wasn't Joel's time yet.
But when it is your time, there's not much you can do about it, is there?
No, I think we all have our time. It may fluctuate a little bit. I think of it like being on a bus or a train, and you have to get off by the last stop. But maybe you get off the stop before that or the stop before that one. You have a choice there. But basically, when it's your time, it's your time. And you'll go to the other side and either plan the next life, or perhaps you've graduated and don't have to come back here. You'll just be helping out from the other side. But when it's your time, it's your time. But this was not Joel's time. He still has things to do here. So one of Joel's tasks is to figure out, why was he saved? What does he need to do? There's a reason for that.
Well, sure is. Okay, thanks for that. Pamela is in Madison, Wisconsin, but not ready. Steve is in Youngstown, Ohio. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, George. Dr. Weiss, how are you?
Thank you. Good.
Hey, the miracle story that I have occurred back in 2005. My ex-wife had another child with another guy. I had three kids, and they were just babysitting this little boy. He was three at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the phone with a guy from work, and at some point, I'm looking around for this little kid, and I yelled for my daughter. I said, where's your brother at? And she made the comment. She goes, I don't know. He was up there with you.
Oh.
And I said, oh, really? I said, well, go get him. He's probably downstairs screwing with, you know, and we had a downstairs bathroom where the cat box was. And
yeah, just playing around.
Go find him. Yeah. You know, go find him. And I got up to go down there to look, and I don't know if this makes sense to you, Dr. Weiss, but something physically grabbed my head and turned it, and I looked, and the screen door going out onto our deck to our pool was open.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran outside, and I don't know what caused me. I literally sprinted out, and he was laying at the bottom of the pool.
Oh, my God.
And I jumped in, and I grabbed him, and I picked him up, and I squeezed him, and he started coughing. And, you know, I called my ex-wife, obviously, and told her, you know, you got to get him to the doctors. But he was fine. I mean,
did he cry when he came out of it?
Yeah, you know, yeah. He was never unconscious. He was just laying, you know, looking. His eyes were wide open looking at me.
Yeah.
And he's got him so fast.
But I mean, I don't know if I subconsciously just heard the splash or whatever, because the doctor said that he couldn't have been underwater. He didn't have any signs of any kind of near drowning or anything.
Jeez,
nothing,
you got him at the right time, Steve. Gee.
But I just don't understand, you know. But I always told people that I physically, it was like, I'm shaking right now telling you this, because I remember physically feeling something stopping me in my tracks and literally turning my head. Because if I would have walked downstairs and started looking for him, you know, around, where's he at? You know, God only knows what could have happened. But that's probably one of the most impactful things that ever happened to me.
That's a dramatic story, Steve. Thank you so much. Brian,
thanks for taking my call. Sure. I appreciate it.
That one's a miracle all the way.
Yeah, there's another one. I love these miracle stories because people have them. And sometimes, as I mentioned, they're reluctant to share it with others because they don't want to be considered strange or weird or it's too different or unusual. But they're beautiful, and they really help people because a lot of people do have these experiences. I think if it wasn't Steve just like hearing a splash or something, you would have heard it. It wouldn't physically take your head and turn it. I think that's how these things happen when that grace happens, when that intervention happens. Whatever it is, angels, spiritual power, energy, something took his head and physically turned him
yes.
to the pool. And he knew right away and went there, and it was clearly in time and good. And those are the miracles. And this physical force, this physical presence, to me, that's, you know, and I come upon this as a clinician, as a psychiatrist, but I still have to call it the divine. There's something bigger.
There's got to be.
Yeah. And Steve experienced that. It's the connection to the other side. It saved the little 3-year-old's life. And Steve is still shaking now. Just, I'm sure it happened quite a while ago, but he's just in remembering it, the power, the immediacy, it's right there.
Puts chills up your spine. We're coming back. We'll take final phone calls with Dr. Brian Weiss on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, we're going to be taping in a couple months, year number 6 of the History Channel's Ancient Aliens, so that's going to be a go. Tomorrow, by the way, on Coast to Coast, a split show as we talk for the first couple hours about how to have luck and create your own good fortune, followed by a story on ETs. And when we come back with Dr. Brian Weiss, let's take your miracle stories right here on Coast to Coast AM. Back with Brian Weiss. Brian, how many years ago did you write Many Lives, Many Masters?
That came out in 1988, so that's 25 years ago.
God, does it seem that long ago?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. But the work that I began with Catherine was 1980, because I didn't write the book for some years after working with her. I was concerned with my reputation and career
sure.
and reaction. So it's really 33 years of doing this work, and 25 since Many Lives, Many Masters came out.
Okay, let's go to final questions and miracle stories for you. We go to Michael in Sandpoint, Idaho, west of the Rockies. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Hi there. Hello, Dr. White. Enjoying the show immensely, and unfortunately, I'm in a very precarious position, and something you said earlier and told me to call, and I've been trying to call the station for about 15 years. This is the first time I've gotten through, so it's kind of a miracle in itself. But
it sure
you
is.
Said, when you said it is our time to go, it's our time to go, I had to call because I'm dealing with some terminal cancer right now. They wanted to give me chemo and radiation and all the usual stuff. And I said, hey, when it's your time to go, it's your time to go. None of that poison is going to stop it. But what I'm wondering, and I'm struggling with this immensely because I'm facing it, how much pain do we endure on this side before we can let go? My father was congestive heart failure, and he unplugged me. He said, if you want to say goodbye, come say goodbye, because after a week, I'm unplugging this machine. And he did, and he died. I don't know if you call that suicide when you know you're going to die. I just don't understand the moral implications of this situation.
Well, for your father, that is, Michael, I'm sorry.
My father, I was just as an example, when my father died of congestive heart failure,
right.
He was hooked up to some machines that were keeping him alive.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if you people want to say goodbye, you know, come say goodbye because I'm unplugging this machine in a week. And he did.
On his
he
own.
Died.
Yeah.
But see, now I'm facing cancer. I have terminal cancer right now, and it's very, very painful.
Stage 5, I take, right?
It's pretty bad. And the pain is increasing, and I don't know how much I'm going to be able to take.
Cancer of the what, Mike?
It's colorectal cancer.
Okay.
Again, when it's your time, it's your time. But it's different when you have this kind of severe pain, or your father had this, especially when it's irreversible, that it's not the same thing as like, oh, you know, I'm jumping off a building because my stock went down 10
right.
points. That, and otherwise I'm perfectly healthy. It's very, very different. I think you can, you know, this is so complicated.
Yeah, it is. Trust me. I've been sitting on this couch for about 8 months struggling with it. Yeah. The other question I have, and it's relevant, and so this is what's tearing me apart. When you say miracles happen every day, that's what's keeping me alive. Romans 12:12. There's always hope around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read near-death experiences by the thousands. One was that you're not supposed to do it because you never know what's around the corner. And if you just wait a little longer, you might see why you're suffering so much. And miracles can happen. And I'm a little concerned that, well, maybe if I go through death with dignity and take that compassionate exit without all the suffering, maybe I'll find out I went too soon.
Right, but you're not going to get punished for that. That's,
well, I'm not worried about punishment.
Right, good. That's the only thing. Otherwise, you have the free will. We talked about that earlier. I'm not saying to do something, to not do something.
Right.
I don't think you should have pain, though. You should be taking something if there's pain. If it
Oh, they've given me some pain meds, and it kind of works. It makes it tolerable, but, you know, it's... There's a lot. It's more complicated than I even knew. They didn't tell me how.
How long have they given you, Mike?
I'm sorry?
How long have they given you?
Well, it's complicated because I'm not playing their game, and so they don't know. They're not really watching me because I've refused their therapy. It's I can't, you know, tell you.
So you're not doing the radiation or the chemo?
No, that's what I was going to say. What difference does it make if you're going to die? It's your time. That's why I called you when you said that.
Yeah.
I said that just. That's exactly what I said. It's your time. When it's your time, it's your time. None of that radiation is going to change that.
But however much time you have, and we're all heading to the same end. I mean, all of us.
We're all going to get down there somewhere.
Yeah, we're all going to leave the physical body and go back to the other side. That's what's going to happen.
Well, I guess what I'm more concerned with is the loved ones here. I've got family here, and they're watching me suffer.
Yeah.
I can't put them through this.
Yeah.
Well, what are you saying, Mike?
Well, I've got, you know, I live in Idaho. I'm close to Washington State. I've been moving to Washington State, and I believe Oregon, I think, has death with dignity. I'm not sure. I was just looking for a general way out, but I don't know what the moral implications are. I was just wondering, through your experiences, Doctor, if you had any of your reincarnated patients come out and say, yeah, I committed suicide, and I learned this or I learned that, and there's some...
Yeah, we have, and some have to come back quicker here because suicide is not the way. But again, there are different types and levels of suicide.
Uh-huh.
The one with the consequences seems to be the one where there's not a need for it. There are other alternative ways to deal with it, like the stockbroker or extortion or shame or this or that. When it's from severe irreversible illness or mental illness, the consequences aren't the same. It's not a punishment thing, but you can still learn every day here. So that's where it gets very complicated. If they have medications to help with pain, only you are in control of your life that way. I think you can. You sound, your mind is sharp. There's still, you're there, and you'll know when it's time. You'll know.
Well, that's a comforting thought, and again, it's struggling with moral implications. Is because you have so many religious institutions barking at you, saying no, you're going to go to hell. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. And,
yeah.
The only message I've ever even trusted out of spirituality was in your death experience, and so that's why I was so attuned to you when you said that. I said,
well, you're not going to go to hell, Michael.
No
matter what. But look, I'm putting you on the Friday prayer list. That's for sure.
Yeah, we really hope you do well and that you have not a great deal of pain, as much as possible. Your mind is still there, and your family's there. So this is why it's up to you.
And not that it's a cure, because I can't go there, but. Take the supplement Bitter Melon. I'm hearing some incredible things about that. I'm a stickler for stuff like that, Brian.
Well, the immune system. Anything that helps the immune system can be very useful.
Yep, absolutely. Shirley's in Monticello, Iowa. Hi, Shirley. Thanks for holding.
Oh, I can feel for your previous caller that I heard his plight, and I'm going to pray for him.
Thank you.
His prayer can move mountains.
Yes.
And I will pray for him. Now, what happened to me... I was very unhappy in my marriage, 14 years of life of being an Iowa farmer's wife, and I thought I was loved. I found for my son, my husband didn't love me the last 10 years of our marriage, and now I see why I did what I did. I didn't know why I did it when I was alive, and why I did it, I was delirious, and I didn't think he wanted me, and I took a bottle of pills. I went to the hospital and not thinking I'd make it. they put me into the room, and I thought it was going to be a goner. But they performed a miracle, and they said they almost lost me. And when I come back, I said, thank you to the Lord for saving my life, for I wouldn't have had my daughter, Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very fortunate to be here.
Mm-hmm.
The doctors do perform miracles, but God had a hand in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, doctors can only do so much. But
I'm very fortunate to be here, and I was blind for a whole day.
But your daughter came after that.
Huh?
Your daughter came after that?
Yeah, she was born after that, and I was very fortunate that I didn't lose her in the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't your time either. And, again, the doctors were able to turn it around to some extent. You still had a lot of living to do and to raise your daughter, so...
Yes, I do, and now she's 30 years old. It happened some time back, a while back, but you never forget those times when you could have been lost, and I felt like a lost sheep of the Lord, and I was found.
Mm-hmm. But,
and I've come to the Lord, and I found out that I do have a purpose in life.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you.
Absolutely.
It is amazing, though, Brian, how we're all going to meet the same fate.
Yes, while Shirley was telling me that, I was thinking also of... my youngest brother is an oncologist, a cancer doctor in St. Louis, and he tells me from time to time some wonderful stories, and just he observes what happens. He's open-minded enough because he knows my work and similar things to just keep an open mind, and he tells his patients, you can tell me anything. I'll be open-minded. I want to hear it. And he had a professor from Washington University there in St. Louis. A professor was a patient. The professor had cancer. And the professor was kind of agnostic, didn't believe in much. And an angel came to the professor and would take what he called bricks out of his abdomen. I don't know that they weren't really bricks. The angel came and did this, and the pain disappeared. The pain was terrible pain. And he was not getting morphine or any other medicine. The angel came and did this and told him things and showed him relatives. And there was a whole spiritual experience that my brother got to witness, to observe, in this agnostic professor who was having these experiences. And it wasn't taking any medicine, so it wasn't like he was delirious from medication or anything like that. This was his actual experience. This angel came and got rid of his pain. I don't know if, you know, Michael's going to have something like that happen, but you never know.
No, you do never know.
You never know.
Let us go to Edmund in Richmond, Virginia. Hey, Edmund, thank you. Go ahead.
How you doing, sir?
Good, good.
Yeah, I was a long-haul truck driver a long time ago, and I was very tired one night coming up the road, going through Tennessee and Kentucky. And the road I was on, it was in the mountains, and it had some steep ravines inside it. But anyway, I was going up the road, and next thing I knew, I looked, and I was kind of on the side of the road, and those little magic marker things that flexed the side road markers. I'd knocked down about five of them, and I kind of woke up, and I went, oh, man, I can't believe I did that. But at that time, I looked in my mirror, and this truck pulled up behind me. The guy gets out, he runs up beside me. He says, are you all right? You all right? And I went, yeah, I think so. Why? And he said, you don't know? And I said, no. What? He says, you had actually run off the road. You were going down into the ravine. He said, you see all them boulders in the river down at the bottom? I said, yeah. He said, right before you got there, he says, somebody must love you or like you or thinks of the world of you, because all of a sudden the truck turned to the left. And he said, it looked like a hand or something just pushed that truck right back up. He said, that's a steep ravine right there. I said, well, I didn't have nothing to do with it. And I said, I don't know what to tell you on that. He says, well, that's a miracle. You're still here. He said, you should be dead. And I said, let's don't go there and let's talk about that. So after that was on, I said, well, let me go on down the road here a little bit. Well, about 5 minutes later, I evidently was going to fall asleep and run off the road again. I was really tired. And I'm the only one that ever rode in the truck. Nobody ever rode with me. It was a big, you know, single wide. And I'm going the road. And the next thing I know, I hear this voice in the back. Can't describe it. I don't know where it comes from. It said, Edmund. And I turned around real quick and I went, what? And I looked back at the windshield real quick, and I was about to run off the road again. So I stopped. I said, I'm not going any further. I've had two warnings here and two miracles in the last hour, and I'm done for the day. So I'm lucky to be here. And on another note real quick, Mr. North and Dr. Wise, y'all can discuss and give me the conclusions. You brought up the thing about ancient aliens. Well, I've seen you on that on the channel here where I live, and I have a fascination with UFOs and ancient aliens and the old stuff like that. And for some reason, I can relate to that stuff. I caught myself one day sitting in a chair watching it, and I went, been there, done that. And then I caught myself.
Okay, Moses, we've come to the close of the broadcast. We're coming back with part two of this. We're going to try to do that tomorrow, so y'all stay tuned for part two. And we'll have some more interesting information in regards to this situation that we're dealing with here. And so I certainly appreciate you all for dialing in. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. And until next time, you all have a good evening.
Girl, and fill you with my charms, I'm sure you will see.